Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp. Well, hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Influential She. It's our conversation about accelerating the influence of women in the world. I'm your co-host, Mel Schopp.
And I'm Deb Soholt, and we're just so glad that you tuned in again, and we appreciate everyone that's becoming followers of Influential She. That just gives us the energy to keep going. And we are just really excited today because we're going to be talking about the high leverage practice of story. And, you know, everything starts with a story, doesn't it, Mel?
Yeah, you know, and I really strongly believe that, you know, we all have, you know, our backgrounds that we could tell through a bio or through, you know, something we have on paper or whether somebody introduces us. But what people really remember is our story. And that's what triggers our imagination. It's what triggers the pieces that people really resonate with who we are.
And, you know, sometimes when we're telling stories both to ourselves and to others, and sometimes the story we tell ourselves internally is not always something that helps us to feel or be more influential because we're telling ourselves a story that, you know, doesn't necessarily, it's not positive for us. It's not in our best interest. Or also we're minimizing our own light in the story that we tell others because we don't want to seem like we're bragging or we don't want to like laundry list accomplishments. But telling the story really captures people in understanding who we are. And it's a way to reveal our authentic self. And I'm so excited today to introduce our guest, Terrell Cadwell. She's been a friend of mine for a long, long time. We actually bonded way, way back around our daughters. They had had a couple of times playing together as little girls. They were 5, 6 years old, somewhere in there. And I was immediately captivated by this person. And just not only just who she was as a mom and community participant, but just who she is as a woman. I mean, this is someone everyone wants to know. And so I'm just so excited because she's been so accomplished in her own right within the roles that she's played in life, not only as a wife and a mom, but she has also been, if you know her, you'll see pictures of her, everyone. You got to take a really good look at her pictures because she is one tough woman and wrapped in this beautiful package. And so she's got a background in criminal justice. She's been known to pack a gun if she has to. She's been working in, she was actually worked up the ranks and became the chief of federal probation and pretrial in the state of South Dakota. So she had a very important job and now is teaching at the University of South Dakota and also the University of Sioux Falls sometimes in criminal justice programs and really helping students learn how to, she understands this fine line between the humanity of people and what needs to happen within the correction system to keep themselves safe and to keep society safe. And it's just so wonderful to welcome you to the show, Terrell. Thanks for coming aboard.
Oh my gosh, I love what you're doing with Influential She. It's just been so watching this kind of happen when it first started with an idea and now seeing where you're at. So thank you so much. I'm so flattered and thrilled to be here.
So let's start with this, Terrell.
Okay.
When we work with guests to come on the show, we ask them to take a look at our high leverage practices and see if one resonates with them. And you immediately were drawn to story. Tell us why that is. Why did that high leverage practice seem to really make sense with you?
Deb, I think because for one thing, I'm finishing up a semester at both universities. And I found, since I've been teaching since 2012 and then training before that, that it always seems to be somebody's story about an event or an example to bring a theory to life that people are drawn to and like. And repeatedly in my evaluations, the students will say, I like the story. I like the stories that you told about the judges, the stories they told, the inmates were re-entering society after a term of imprisonment, that those were the things that resonated with them, that they were learning the most from. So that's number one of why it jumped out. And it was right in front of me because I'm wrapping up the semester. And then secondly, my dad, who has written a book and has been on me to write my memoirs like he did, and I said, I don't know how to start. I mean, where do you start? I don't want to say, well, in the beginning, you know, that I was born here and grew up there. And he said, you know what? You start with a story. And that doesn't, they don't have to be in order, just a story that you like. And that, and put it, that's in the table of contents. That's number one. And then you go to another story. And he said, it's amazing how at the end, they all come together and tell your whole life. if you're going to, you know, or what the message is that you're bringing to the audience. So I really thought that was wonderful. And then the last thing that I loved about it is that most people, including myself, we underestimate our story. I will hear somebody else's or even some of the wonderful women you guys have interviewed, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, no, that's a story. And so that, whether they're at Prince of Peace Nursing Home, and one of the gals was the ER nurse in Bullhead, South Dakota, Deb and Mel, you both know what I'm talking about, in the 60s and 70s.
Little teeny wee town. Yeah.
Absolutely. No doctors available. And she did everything. And my dad would say, oh my gosh, Jean, you got to write your memoirs. Oh, that's, nobody would be interested in that story. So that it's appealing to me in terms of writing my own book. And also just because I think it brings a lot of everything to light. I love it.
You know, Terrell, I think that that was what drew me to asking Deb that we've got to get Terrell as one of our podcast guests. So I only have met you once in person. We were at Deb's daughter's wedding, sitting at the same table. And not only are you this magnetic woman that you get to meet, but you have this way of engaging other people in your life and in your story. And so the other day when we were doing our pre-interview with you, you mentioned that you've got three stories that you've actually named, which I just find, I'm anxious to hear the three of them because I've been just waiting for today so that I can get the full picture and the full story. Can you give us kind of a highlight of what those are? Because they sound pretty intriguing to me.
Yeah, tell us your stories.
Well, the names of the three stories, Silas and the Broken Beer Bottle, Bloody Snow, and Death by Cop. And each one of them did have a very important message for me. They all happened during my years with U.S. probation when I was in supervision investigative units. So those are three stories from my career that. And then I had a couple of other stories about that I'd been telling myself and how those they didn't serve me any longer. They needed to go away. And what was it really prompted those not useful stories anymore, that I could put them to rest.
Well, tell us about Silas and the Broken Beer Bottle.
Oh, Silas and the Broken Beer Bottle. Okay. So back in the days with U.S. probation, we would have people get out of prison, and we could sit up in the third window of the federal building and watch. They'd get off the bus. This was before reentry programs and people getting assistance with $25 and get off the bus, and they would head straight for the liquor store that was right directly behind the federal building. So we'd try to race down there and catch them before they went in and got drunk, because oftentimes that would lead to another crime, the thing that got him in trouble in the first place. Well, this man had just gotten out of prison, and I had a college intern with me, a sweet young senior at Augustana College at the time, and she came with me to the field, and I was going to find this man and introduce myself and kind of start working with him. I had met his brother on one occasion. So we went to every door and knocking on the door trying to find him, and it was this kind of a deal, and maybe you guys know what I'm talking about. You just missed him. Oh, gosh, you just missed him. Why don't you check over here? Go to this housing, this street, this number. So every place, they were kind of sending us all over the place. It was in the middle of January, freezing cold, wind chill factor, no cell phones back then. So we walked around the corner of one house, and there he was, passed out in the snow. I mean, dangerous. You know, had been drinking, passed out, could die easily. And so the intern and I were over thinking, well, you don't really call for help at that point without a cell phone. So we're trying to help him up, and we're going to put him in the car and take him. And here comes who I recognize immediately as his brother Silas around the side of the house with a broken beer bottle in a menacing fashion to us. And it was like, you know, the brilliant internal guardian that you have in the back of your brain that comes to your rescue when you least expect it. And I remember that I'd met him once, and for whatever reason, it kicked in that I can deal with this with something less than the maximum kind of a safety measure. And here, with this intern with me, but I think I said to him, Silas, drop the beer bottle and come over here and help us, or take off, either one, but this is not going to work. Drop it and come help us. And he did. So that was great. And I guess the instinct was to, you really can rely on that gut instinct when you're in a situation, if it's a threatening situation, if it's where you have to make a really fast decision. It's a brilliant internal guardian. There's back of the brain, I had information that this guy, I knew I could handle him. I remembered his name when normally I would not remember his name. So, you know what I mean? Those things, that really helped me have trust in myself.
Terrell, I'd be really curious. Tell me how your intern reacted to this whole situation, because that had to be really... a lasting impression on her.
It did. It did. And we ended up hiring her. She applied to work with us after she graduated. We had her on our staff. I loved her from day one. We had a couple of other funny stories too that happened with her, but we don't want to have all day to hear all my stories. But anyway, that was one. Another one, I don't remember, move on.
And hang on a minute, Cheryl, because I want to ask you about this internal guardian that mm-hmm. you talked about. Mm-hmm. And I think you said something really powerful, that we all have this internal guardian as part of our story.
Yeah.
And many times we don't want to trust that internal guardian to guide our way. Absolutely. Instead of saying we can now walk through with confidence,
yeah.
not only in an emergency situation, but just in any situation, that we have been building this story that informs a level of confidence that we can use to act.
Absolutely.
And I think that's just such an important thing for women, don't you? Instead of doubting and wondering, okay, I don't have the capacity to maybe handle this, but saying, no, I'm confident. I understand because this is in my backstory.
Yeah.
And it's cumulative, and now I can use it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And oftentimes we don't even realize the information that's being stored on the back burner for us, and it comes right up in front. Like, for example, his name. I met the man one time, but his name, and that was a powerful thing to be able to say his name. You need to help us or your brother's going to die, and put that down. And I do think coming into an organization where I was one out of 40 or 50, I was one woman in the middle of 40 or 50 men in most of the conferences in those days with federal probation. And there was a group of people that I totally admired. I wanted to emulate and be part of that system, but they were all men. So I had to find a way to find a role model or who I was without dampening who I really was myself for a long time. But anyway, that was one of the stories that gave me confidence, because I thought, you know what? I'm there. I can count on myself.
Okay, now that is really important. If I need myself, I am there, and I can count on myself.
Wow. Isn't that the truth? But
wow. And you have a story called Death by Cop.
Death by Cop, yes. This one is about hope. This was taught me the importance of giving people hope and making sure we have it for ourselves. We had a transfer case from Chicago. He used to run guns and drugs for the new mob, but it was still deadly and bad situation. He transferred to South Dakota, which we never should have accepted supervision. There wasn't any really resources for him here. And he had a background of violence with guns and drugs. And I'd had a couple of positive drug tests. I remember it was on a Friday afternoon in the summer, late afternoon. And I knew I had to go out because something could happen over the weekend very easily if this guy was using drugs. And my boss, who was a fabulous man, wonderful, and assisted me in growing up in the organization. And I said, I'm going to head out. This guy's got a second dirty drug test. I'm going to put it at Glory House tonight. And I remember Jack said, take a deputy marshal with you. I think maybe you need to take somebody with you. I thought, okay, that's fine. So grabbed a deputy marshal. We went out and long story short, he was not interested in talking to me or taking any chances with what he probably thought was coming, a placement at a residential treatment center. So he left it, put his hand in his coat and wouldn't take it out when we were talking to him. And the deputy marshal immediately saw that as a big red flag, said, we got to see your hands, take your hands out. And he wouldn't do it. And he was far enough away where he could have had, you know what I mean? It was just not a good situation. I know for a fact, if I would have been with my other friend who worked for the Marshal Service, and Deb, you know him too, somebody could have been shot and killed that afternoon.
Yeah, I think it would have gotten aggressive.
Absolutely. This guy was way softer. He was a little bit like me. We were both a little bit softer in the way we handled things. And anyway, I learned later after we took him into custody, he said, I wanted it to be over. I didn't have the courage to kill myself was basically what he told me. I wanted it to be over. So the whole concept of hope, all of us learned something that day. It could have been a very bad situation. If he didn't have a gun, he didn't have a gun. But he wanted to pretend like it was so it would be over, that he'd be shot. And he pushed it to the very last minute.
Wow.
So, it was a huge relief, and it was a learning point about the importance of that. For young women, for people we work with, in whatever field we're in, right? In the coronavirus era.
So, Terrell, you know, when you talk about that and you talk about your approach, I think this is something that we have learned in the conversations we've had with many women, as well as throughout our own careers, that we do approach some situations somewhat differently as a female. It's not good, it's not bad, but it's different. We do bring a different sort of perspective. but I'm thinking about specifically in the field that you're in. So we're deviating a little bit from the story, but I'd really be curious how you see as a female in the field that you're in with, you know, male dominated, how your approach is different or recognized amongst those you work with, as well as with what you do. Is it significantly different as a woman?
Yes and no. I mean, I really saw it as individual differences more often than not, truly. I mean, the things I noticed as a female coming in was if you have a group of women in a conference room and a new person comes in, hi, you know what, we reach out to each other, whether, you know, and there's a little conversation. The first time I met all the guys that that I was going to be joining, my boss was a brand new boss, and I was his first hire. So he had a lot invested in me doing well. And they had all the guys from the other offices come in, and they were sitting in the conference room with their feet up on the table, reading a newspaper, didn't even give me a sideline look. So, you know, they were going to be very skeptical. They're one of them that absolutely didn't want me hired. So there was kind of that cold reception and a real formal, rigid, that's not me at all. So I was very uncomfortable with it. But you know what? I took it as a challenge, and I'm enough of a people pleaser that I thought, I can make them like me. I know I can do, so I kind of took it as a challenge. But it was awkward, and it caused me to dampen how I would normally interact with them. Where it came to the field work, Mel, and what you're talking about, or the way we interview, it was more individual differences, I would say, that way.
And don't you think, like when you were talking about being with all these men and coming in, mm-hmm. and now you have a style of how you have to interact, that's just completely not you. But this is really important to try to figure out what story as a woman am I going to start relating about myself to the men?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking about something we don't spend a lot of time thinking about. Like, mm-hmm. what would be how they could get to know me, but it comes in a package of strength that they could understand and respect?
You're so right.
Instead of kind of holding back. And I think I look back in my career and there were times where I just held back because I was like, I'm not sure, you know, how I would normally relate and how I'd be very conversational. Yeah. I'd be trying to get to know you. They're not giving me that leverage right now. Mm-hmm. They being, you know, a more male dominated work environment. And so as I look back on it and I think about advice for young women to accelerate is to spend some time thinking about how can you tell your story of you in that kind of environment where it could be received.
Absolutely right. I remember one of the things that caused me to, they're formal. They were a small group. They were tight. They had each other's back. And I wanted to, when I saw them from afar, when I was with the state and the federal, the guys from feds would walk, I thought, I want to work there. I want to be one of them. But I knew that my style, like Mel, you kind of alluded to it a little bit, was way more informal, more animated. I'm tall. I talk fast. I talk loud. You know, those guys were all very tight, you know, controlled. And so when I did come in and had some trouble, really, especially with one guy who didn't like me at all, and it really bothered me. We were a small office in Sioux Falls at the time. And I actually went to see a therapist because I thought, I need somebody to help me. And there were no other women. Seriously, there were no other women at the time. And so one of her suggestions was, how about if you just try talking softer and talking slower? That was one of her suggestions. And at the time, I thought, that's brilliant. But it also put me further into that mode of get the damper down.
Exactly.
So less of yourself.
Yeah.
Wow.
Less of yourself.
Yes. Be less of who you really are because it's too threatening to him. He was a smaller guy. He was a real slight build. He didn't like me at all. And he never really did change no matter what I would do. So, you know, you learn that lesson. I think generally it came to being respected. You know, if you did your job well, and you had the respect or not. But the thing that really changed me to think I need to be authentic and I'm going to be who I am, I was walking down the hall of the federal building one day, and it was just me in the hall. An attorney was coming the other way, and I had worked on a couple of cases with him, and his daughter went to elementary school with our girls, Deb. And he walked by me, and there was nobody else there. And I sure I was thinking of something oh so serious, you know, or whatever, and smiled at him while what I thought was a smile. He walked by, and under his breath, he said, "Don't you ever smile." And I thought, oh my goodness. Gosh.
Wow.
I was totally offended. Totally offended by him. I thought, he doesn't know me. I'm a happy person. I'm a positive. But you know what? I was carrying that whole thing around and didn't even realize how I was coming off. So that was a turning point for me. When I got over being offended and went home and thought about it, I'm going to be exactly who I am, take it or leave it, like it or not like it. And it worked so well with my career. I mean, I was doing okay, but it really helped me enjoy it more and do better.
Well, you just can't pretend to be something you're not have it come off that I'm authentic enough to have a relationship with you.
Absolutely.
Once you start holding back, and you know, then you're less real.
Yep.
And then you become less effective.
But absolutely right.
And you move further and further away.
Think how many times we do that, though, I think, to try to fit in whatever environment. I think I remember doing some of those same things, thinking that I had to adjust, you know, whether it was reactionary or how I presented myself in the same way. So that's a really powerful example, Terrell, I think, to all women in a really professional but also personal way about not losing your identity regardless of the situation.
Well, yeah, and you know, I do think there's times like I don't have to be full-blown Terrell on steroids 24/7. You know what I mean? I can take it down.
Yeah, we can tamp ourselves down a little bit.
I could tamp it a little bit, but I was probably doing it too much, especially where it came to the working with the colleagues. I always had a great relationship with my boss. He was just amazing. And he hired me. So he knew who I was and he wanted me in that job. But the other guys, I had to win them over as we went along. And then after a few years, women, we were everywhere. I saw that happen. We just exploded in growth. We were women chiefs in Dallas and Washington, D.C. and San Francisco. And I was involved in the national program. So they were, and we had a U.S. attorney here and who became a federal judge, the first female federal judge, who's a phenomenal role model and woman. So it changed rapidly after that point. And right when I could have used them early, they weren't there, but I had figured out as best I could. And then all of a sudden, women were everywhere. And it was awesome.
You know, I want to circle back to your story of death by cop a little bit, Terrell, where you talked about, you know, you talked about this was hope. You learned a lot about hope and people intervening and helping people grab onto a piece of hope.
Yeah.
But I also think it's an interesting story about this gentleman wanted others to write it at the end.
Oh my gosh, good point.
And, you know, it's like, how many times do we abdicate to others? I want you to write this for me now because for whatever reason, if I'm feeling hopeless or I'm just feeling so discouraged or whatever, I'm going to abdicate my story now to others to take hold
of it. Absolutely right.
And I think that's something we can ask ourselves in certain situations. Did I abdicate my story to someone else?
Yeah.
Did I say, why don't you write it for me now? Because I don't have the courage, the strength, the chutzpah, the moxie right now to feel like I want to write it. So I'm going to give it to you to
write. Or sit there and wait and see what happens.
Sit there and wait and see what happens.
Instead of making the decision, I'll see what bubbles up. I've heard that term a lot too when it comes to retirement, for example.
Right.
But you're so right. That's a great point about that story.
Well, and sometimes to grab hold of our next chapter, we do have to resonate with it for a while and just wait.
Mm-hmm.
But it's being authored by us.
That's right.
Not authored by others.
That's a great point about that story. And I was thinking it was about hope, but it's really about that as well.
It's about both. Yeah. It's about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Thank goodness you were there that day. And now you have one titled Bloody Snow.
Bloody Snow. This was a good one too. And this is one that we all know is true, but we have to get it in our heart that things are not always as they seem. A brand new guy getting out of prison. I hadn't met him, but his crime was manslaughter. And even though manslaughter is not intentionally taking a life, you're doing criminal behavior and somebody dies as a result. But the term manslaughter, when you think of that, and I was a brand new parole officer in November, and there was a little bit of snow on the ground. I was by myself and working in the field in a very remote area, and he'd just gotten out of prison. I hadn't met him. And so but manslaughter was in my head. And so I was kind of thinking, I was new, you know, so I'm thinking, this is, wow. So I got out of the car, and there was a trail of blood, kid you not, all the way up to the front door of his house. And the smart person who was really would have said, I'm going to be coming back tomorrow. One more night before I meet him is just fine. I'll come back in the daytime. The sun was starting to go down, but I didn't do that. I went up and knocked on the door, and what it was, he was cleaning a deer. He had gone out, and he was not supposed to have a gun, but he shot a deer, probably didn't have any money for food at the time, and was dressing the deer out inside the house. It was a...
Wow.
Yeah. Oh. So, you know.
Which for some of our listeners in urban areas, you're freaked out right now, but this can be the South Dakota experience.
It was absolutely right. Rural South Dakota. And so, I mean, that was the big message. And I was so relieved. And we ended up having a fabulous relationship. He turned out to be very, very much succeeded with what he had left in his life to live after a long, long prison term. But anyway, I thought that was a wide-eyed open, you know what? Don't ever think something from that is exactly as it seems. It just, yeah.
So, you should have a little bit of dose of caution as the sun is going
absolutely
down and you're
right.
Watching, you know, blood through the snow. But you can't always assume on someone else's story.
No. And it's not always important that the little thing that you think you have to do, like if I was going to go and get those papers signed and get him orientation, that probably was not the most important thing to do that night. But somehow I thought, no, I got to keep at it until I get that done. That's part of that job. You know what I mean? So it is, you're right, Deb, discernment and thinking it through and then making a decision from there. But it turned
out I think that filter of a mental model of how we can prejudge somebody's own story. We make all these assumptions that come from our informed past.
Absolutely.
But it's not our story, it's theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to understand another person's story first before we make all these judgments about how it is or who they are or where
absolutely
they've come from.
Absolutely right.
Because people show up with all kinds of things that have happened in their life mm-hmm. that really make a difference in who they are today.
But Terrell, mm-hmm. do you think too that and maybe you can respond to this rather than my assuming, but did you feel like you somehow had to prove that you were able to deal with this regardless, or, you know, you were going to do this because you had to prove yourself, where sometimes instead
absolutely
of throwing caution
absolutely
to the wind.
I didn't ever want to be, well, she's a girl.
Yep, exactly.
She's, you know, we have to carry her, or we're going to have to. So I absolutely would be part of it. And not wanting to admit to fear.
Sure.
You know, that's the other issue that I think we all have to deal with no matter what we're doing. You know, the opposite of fear. If we're feeling fear, we need a little more love, right? I mean, that's really the truth. That's not hate and love. They're the opposites. It's fear. It's, to me, we need more love if we're afraid.
Oh, that is such a good point. I know. I think about that when I was like working with my team and they would be all unsettled. And I think, you know, in my younger days, I was like, well, we have these policies and procedures and mm-hmm. protocols, and this mm-hmm. is just how it is. And you're just kind of hardcore. And all of a sudden along the way, I went, that is like nonsense. When they're unsettled, it's because their essential needs as human beings are not being met.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just consciously say, I need to go love my people more. They're all on edge.
Yes.
And if you could provide that, it tamped down their anxiety and fears mm-hmm. about what mm-hmm. was coming in the future. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't even have the answers, but you're just taking care of them as humans, people.
Such a good point. And I keep going back to what Mel, when you asked that question, how women maybe do it differently, I do think we're more likely to reach out and do that maybe a nurturing piece, maybe a little more willing to show the love to somebody on our clay soap, even if they are a hardcore antisocial personality, you know, I think there might be a little difference with that and they show it differently.
So Terrell, I'd really be curious. So you worked your way all the way up through the ranks though, and really became, I mean, you really held a position that was highly regarded. I know that to get there, you had to do some, in fact, you took out another man for the actual position that you ended up in. Can you tell us a little bit about that struggle to get to where you are? Because that is part of your story about really becoming influential in the space that you are in today or that you were in.
Well, like with all of us, if we can credit ourselves hard work. I mean, you know, I did work hard, but I also had a lot of help. Like, for example, that guy who hired me, who was a great mentor to me and a good friend to me, he put me early on into the national training system, and he could have held me back and kept me in my little box kind of in South Dakota, but he exposed me to that right away. I always loved teaching and training, and he saw it. You know how if we recognize that in somebody, give them the opportunity to go build that or grow it up, you know? So he put me in the national system, and that really helped a lot because I came to the attention of, if you can use your gifts, you know, they're going to shine a little bit. And I was able to do some of that training and teaching, and then the confidence grows. And then honestly, where it came to that chief's job, I knew I was going to apply for it. I knew I could do the job, But I was really happy as an assistant deputy chief because I was close enough to the what I call the real work. And I'm not sure I was as good administrator, honestly, as I was a middle manager. Seriously, but I got the job. And I remember when I went into the interview with the judge, I said, I told him that I'm in a win-win situation here because if I get the chief's job, it'll be a huge challenge. I'm going to love the job. I know I can do it, but I love what I'm doing right now. And so if I, you know, stay as a deputy or an assistant deputy chief, that would make me happy as well. And it kind of goes to my experience with a lot of women. We're choosing maybe not to go all the way to the top. Some women choose not to.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And it can be.
It's okay.
And the door, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
If that feels absolutely right for you, but there had to have been something in you that you said, my story's not quite done with this yet. I need that next challenge and I got to see how that plays out.
Yeah. And I did love it. It was a wonderful way to end that my career with U.S. probation and work with some fabulous people.
Well, and you ended up with a really strong partnership with a federal judge who was a female. You alluded to her before. Oh. Talk about how she influenced your story.
Oh, my gosh. I wouldn't even want to even put myself any kind of a work ethic against hers. You know what I mean? The woman will always outwork. Seriously. And also being cool and calm and respectful of everybody. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say a bad word about her. And I think it's partially just because she's very aware of how it's that whole old thing. It's not necessarily what you say to somebody, it's how you make them feel when they walk away. And she's a perfect example of that. And just excellence, leading with excellence. You know, showing the example. I'm sure she would have stories that I would understand, some things she's probably been through that I have no idea about. But
she was one of those women. Women don't always really back each other up. We've seen that, you know, and I don't know if that there's so few spots at the top that we're all clamoring for kind of the same thing. So it ends up being more competitive than it does. Or if that's just human nature. I mean, I don't want to generalize it just to all women. Mm-hmm. But she was one of those women that could say, I'm helping to lift up other women.
Absolutely right. And she definitely did that with me. A chance to be part of a huge transition where we did a shared administrative services and we were leaders in the nation. So I got to go out and do some things with her on that. She was one of those people. And so I really had the blessing of people in my life who were willing to help me. And if I was willing to work at it, and get over myself a little bit, you know, and work with those guys. And like Deb, I love some of the things you've said that they have a different purpose sometimes in the room. And we always think, well, we don't think somebody has to win. Isn't that your point? I loved that.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of that is, you know, hormonally driven that they just have this, someone has to win and it's biologic for them. Mm-hmm. And so some of it is also socialized in how it is and, you know, where our culture's at, but there are just some biological markers that, you know, it's just a heavy, and that's just testosterone makes somebody's got to win in this room. So you got to know what game you're in.
Absolutely right. And so that figuring out how to work with that is really a big key for, I think, our young women that are so phenomenally talented. And I love working with these students at the universities because they are starry-eyed. They want to accomplish their balance. They want to have a balanced life. And it just, I don't know, they're fabulous to be around.
So Tara, tell us a little bit about that. So now you're teaching, correct? What do you take away from this part of your life? And what are you learning from the students that you're teaching that has made an impact for you at this point?
Well, I do feel like it's part of my legacy. And that's becoming more and more important to me the older I get. That if I can help them figure out what it is they really want. And I think there's some excellent people in higher education and in those universities, but sometimes I don't feel that they feel to me like they're hungry for more direction on what about their career, not just about how many credits for that semester. So maybe advisors are doing a lot with that I wouldn't know what to do with some of those things. But in terms of long-term and where do I start and what if I want this? What if I want to get that? Should I go to law school for that? Or should I get my master's degree? Should I do it now? Or should I work for a while? Or what is really the best fit for me? And I think I told you both about the young woman who didn't know if she wanted to go into law enforcement. So she did a ride-along.
Yeah.
And ended up it was a fatality accident and how horrifying it was for her. But she realized after she went through that, I know I can do it. I didn't know for sure if I could be a law enforcement officer, but now I want it and I know I can do it. Whether that's a lawyer, you know, they get from those experiences, and it's such a kick for me, jazzes me to be able to be part of that.
So, Terrell, you were talking about earlier that you had a couple of stories that you were telling yourself at different points in your life that weren't necessarily serving you well.
Yeah.
Share with our listeners some of that.
Well, I kind of alluded to one of them, which was being formal and tight and kind of serious. And the other part of me that was early in my career, especially, because I saw those guys were all, they had suits and ties. When we were all, like the state people, we'd be in jeans and our guys would be probably drinking too much beer. There were more of us. Not that they weren't a professional group, but these guys, I mean, they were on their game. They had suits and ties on when they went out to dinner. And that was back in the day when they dressed up, you know, and always very controlled and appropriate. And so I think that you kind of tried to fit that mold. And I just realized that, no, me being authentically me is better. I guess that was the only story. And then how about the smile? That was the thing that really kicked it for me.
Well, and you've had some experiences in your story where you've had intense grief in your life and had to move on and rewrite your story.
Yes.
Share a little bit of that with our listeners.
Well, and Deb, you and Jerry were one of the two of the people that were just there from the beginning and have stayed through the whole thing. My husband, Denny, was a fabulous guy. And seriously, here I'm talking about all my career could never have happened and raised two amazing kids without that precious man who supported me and went through all this stuff with me behind the scenes and had his own career as well. But we lost him after a long battle with Crohn's disease, put him in the hospital for a long time, and he was very ill with that. And then secondly, with COPD, they complicated each other. And so we lost him finally after quite a long fight. And I was right in the middle of getting ready to retire when Denny was at the end.
And you have to retire early when you're in the federal system
like
that.
Yes, it's mandatory. And you all know when you're headed to it, so you all know you're
going to have to do it. So you're in your mid-50s. You're not like,
Right. And one of the best pieces of advice I got, and again, I think this is the other advice for our young women, do not be afraid to seek out professional help if you need it. And it's not like we have this deep, deep stuff that maybe has to be carved out. Sometimes we do, but I went to see somebody again because I thought, my husband's sick, I'm retiring, who am I going to be? So I went in to talk to somebody about that. And the best advice I got was, it started out kind of as retirement counseling and ended up as grief counseling because it all happened at the same time. But her advice was don't make sure you're talking to your kids every single day about how you feel. And she goes, that's if you're having a bad day, you let them know I had a horrible dream, I miss dad so much, or if you're having a great day. And I thought, well, that's not right. I don't want to drag my kids down with my issues, but you know what? It was the best thing I could have done for our kids and I to be close and come through that really well.
And then was it rewriting your own story now as a single person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there had to have been some moments in that where you're like, who am I now? Like not only just sharing all of you with your kids so that you can walk through this together, but sharing you with others.
Yeah. Well, of course, girlfriends. Women friends are huge. And then finding a new way to being, I kind of lucked out again because I got to move right into teaching, which I loved and was really comfortable with training and teaching. So that is something I've absolutely loved and I was able to continue doing that. I would say the other thing was starting to decide if I wanted to be in another relationship again. The whole dating thing at this age is a whole different deal. And so what I think I've learned from this whole process is, you know, I'm happy with your life the way it is without somebody else too. I mean, I'm very open to that and I love that. And I have a man in my life right now, but you can do it either way.
Yeah. And just finding your own strength that
absolutely
you can write your own story.
Absolutely.
If you need to.
Right.
We're strong, but it doesn't always mean it's easy or fun or not totally grief ridden or having a lot of low spots.
Absolutely not. And you know what I tend to do? I tend to gloss over the low spots. I don't really want to go there. I don't really like to talk about it or admit that they're low. So I kind of gloss over them. And sometimes denial is okay. You know, it kind of helps you get through the rough spots, but it's also, you don't want to do it too much. And so anyway, I have to be aware that I do that sometimes. But
Terrell, I really appreciate you being, you know, candid and open with all of us because I think we all needed to hear that. It's okay to be vulnerable at points, but when we are, we need to make sure that, you know, we're willing and able and not afraid to reach out. So really important pieces of advice along with everything else you've given us today, which I so appreciate you. And wow, this has just been so fun to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. You guys are amazing. Well, this is like therapeutic, isn't it? To go through our story.
It is for us. I'll tell you what.
It is like therapy to go through your story and to tell it.
Thank you both so much.
And just thank you so much, Terrell, for being on the show and helping out with our podcast. And as my dear friend, being such an encourager throughout all this process as we've, you know, launched a new business, it's just meant the world to me. And so to our listeners, we just always appreciate you tuning in to another episode of Influential She and really hearing how through the power of story, you can tell yourself messages, you can rewrite for yourself internally and just really acknowledge and honor and respect how beautiful you are and that all of the things that have happened to you along the way are a part of what make you magnificent and individual. And really, you know, perfect the way you are. And that you can translate that internal goodness into a powerful story that will accelerate your influence with others. That you don't have to hide yourself. You don't have to be a person to walk away from all of the strength that you have within you. And the world wants to hear it. And so we would encourage all of you to really think through the story you tell yourself and the story you tell others. We want to thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Influential She. We hope you'll do it again.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.